want me to follow proper.
I like this no protocol.
You see that the little piece of
yeah.
Just like that.
Will you capture everything?
Everything.
Okay. So are you once again say good morning to everybody, especially His Excellency Ambassador Halime, His Excellency Ambassador Steinberg from the Israeli Embassy and the Palestinian Embassy respectively. Welcome, Excellencies. May I also take the opportunity to welcome Deputy Ambassador Finkelstein to this event. A warm welcome as well to Mr. Petros de Kock, who will be our facilitator today and discuss on this well. also welcome Mr. Naim Gina, who will be our presenter for the day. Let me take this opportunity to welcome all the organizations that are here, the various organizations, and but especially to the honorable members of the Portfolio Committee, International Relations and Cooperation. Honorable members, this is the event that you decided should take place to interrogate this matter further. Now, let me kick off by first and foremost apologizing for the logistical challenges that we have faced. Some of you will recall that initially the plan was to have this symposium in Pretoria because of the fact that the House Parliament convened two this afternoon, we could not be out of Cape Town. So again, because of logistical problems, again with the previous the other venue and the other hotel that we initially were supposed to use, we had to move over here. We thank you for being present, for being here today, and thank you so much for your understanding. And now, honorable members, excellencies, ladies and gentlemen, to the rest of you, welcome as well. Now, today's gathering objective really is to capacitate the committee on international relations and cooperation on how to respond to the continued political conflict between Israel and Palestine. Now, this, of course, is in cognizance of the continued difficulties that are being faced by not only the Israelis and Palestinians, but also the broader Middle East. Now, the committee's desire, as explicitly stated in previous two engagements that we have, really was to listen to both sides, you know, their views. We set ourselves out to listen to the voices of the people, you know, sympathetic to both sides of the conflict, so that that enables us to really drop an approach and recommend to Parliament what kind of response we think that the committee Parliament should pursue in joining the international community to help to resolve the conflict in that part of the world, a conflict that has been raging for more than 60 years. Now, let me point out to you, ladies and gentlemen, that this is a committee briefing session in the main, and that the orders and rules of the House will be applicable in this meeting or in this gathering. Let me point out that from our previous experience in the Portfolio Committee, where I had to, you know, sort of step in and call order, you know, we really expect that all of us today will engage openly, but we will do so with the necessary respect and dignity that all of us deserve. Needless to point out that engagement or debate, the robust debate is fine, but sometimes there's a fine line. It is my view that I think in the committee we overstepped that line, and as such I had to call order. I do not hope that there's going to be a recurrence of what happened. I'm quite, you know, aware that this is an emotive issue, not only for the Israelis and Palestinians themselves, but for all South Africans. I mean, South Africans are so emotional about this issue. And this can be seen sometimes in, you know, how we engage, and sometimes the substance of the issues really are lost in the emotions. We hope that today, by presenting this opportunity to all of us, we will be making a decisive break from that kind of thing and really openly, constructively engage. Because in the final analysis, all of us, we may differ about approach, but all of us realize that it's only by working together that there can be a resolution to the conflict in that part of the world. So let me take this opportunity then to welcome Mr. Petros de Kock, who is the facilitator who will take us further into the program. Now, lastly, I know there have been some requests for more time. There has been pressure, in fact, applied on our people, you know, to change the program to allow for more engagement, especially from the sides of the various organizations that I see. Now, you will be with us if we were to allow everybody 20 to 30 minutes to take at the whole time. Yes, it is not practical. But it is also not as if this is the first engagement. We've had these engagements. Various organizations have spoken to this matter. In fact, of the organizations here today, I think there's probably two at the most that haven't had the chance to participate in previous two committee briefings on this very very same matter. So we will be very strict on time because we have a house sitting this afternoon, and we would like to hear everybody speaking on this, including people who are here who are not necessarily part of any organization, but people who may want to, you know, to raise some questions and so on. So with those few words, let me welcome you, all of you, especially excellencies, the ambassadors for both Palestine and Israel. Thank you very much, Mr. Paul.
Good morning. I'll briefly introduce myself. I'm with the South African Institute of International Affairs, Cape Town office. Honorable Chair, thank you for inviting Saya to facilitate the program today. Welcome to Your Excellency's ambassadors, members of the public and interested parties. Just a brief comment from my side. I have the full permission of the Chair to be quite strict when it comes to time. So my approach will be, I will take my watch. When 5 minutes is up, I'll just put up my hand and I'll indicate, and if there's a need for an intervention, I'll call on the committee chair to assist me in imposing the strict timeline. Now, I think in terms of the laying the foundation for the discussion, I think it's important for us to realize that in a changing world, we cannot pay enough attention to the sociological, economic, and all the dimensions of various conflicts on the planet, and especially in the case of Israel-Palestine. So without any further ado from my side, I'm just going to follow the program as it is laid out, and I will call on the first presenters, the Jewish Board of Deputies, to give us your perspective. Are you prepared? Yes. Is it that much in the way? Oh, okay. Please do that.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, invited guests, my name is Mary Klug. I'm the National Chairman of the South African Jewish Board of Deputies. We're going to show a short clip, and then I'm going to give a brief address.
Sorry? sorry. Technical things always. Okay, I think we should just call it quits.
As Jewish South Africans, we long for a day when the people in Israel and Palestine can resolve their differences through meaningful dialogue so that they can live in peace, side by side, with secure borders. We have seen the miracle of transformation in our own country, and we know that situations that seem hopeless and desperate can indeed change and can result in parties coming together and finding mutually beneficial outcomes. But we in South Africa know that this process is not simple. It comes through the hard work of parties sitting around a table trying to understand each other's insecurities and anxieties. The challenge is for both sides to see the situation from the perspective of the other partner in the negotiation. To overcome these obstacles, the parties themselves need to work through these painful and difficult issues so that they can constructively develop solutions that address the concerns so that a sustainable way forward can be determined. It was through the extensive interactions, dialogues, negotiations, and cadences that South Africans were able to understand each other, work through the difficulties, and build a future that both parties could live with. So many of our South African leaders who spearheaded the transformation in our country speak of the formula for our change being negotiate, negotiate, and then negotiate some more. They know that there were no shortcuts to our country's move to democracy. It was an ongoing dialogue and engagement. Although many countries tried to shape our future and bring about change, it was only once the nationalist government and the ANC committed themselves to the transformation that the process could truly begin. So the many initiatives that are constantly arising to demonize Israel make no constructive contribution to the peace process. They in no way encourage the parties to come to the table to work towards a negotiated settlement. All they do is polarize the two sides, drawing a wedge between them that makes dialogue harder and harder. Boycotts, sanctions, pseudo-legal tribunals, apartheid and Nazi comparisons do nothing more than detract from the critical objective, which is to bring the parties together and find a solution for transformation. It saddens us, as Jewish South Africans, that our own country's experience of peace building is not offered as a unique model for the people of Israel and Palestine. Our leaders came together to talk, even though there was distrust and animosity. What a powerful lesson for the Middle East. In the early 2000s, the Likud delegation visited South Africa, and their leadership was very moved by the lessons they learned from the South Africans who were involved in the transformation. We need to see more of this sharing of experiences. But our role should be to facilitate the dialogue, to support the negotiation, and to encourage the parties to come together. We should never be seen to impose solutions on another conflict. This has been our government's foreign affairs and international relations and cooperation policy since our democracy. Our government has always offered assistance, but never foisted its solutions on another conflict area. In post-1994 South Africa, our government has made such a valuable contribution to so many conflict situations in Africa, bringing divergent sides together to make a lasting peace. Kenya, Burundi, Sudan, and the Ivory Coast are just a few examples. We hope that this same sensible approach and stance applied to other areas of conflict will also be applied in the Israel and Palestine situation. We have provided each member of this committee with a list of 27 organizations that promote dialogue between Israelis and Palestinians, both in the Middle East and in third-party countries. The Department of International Relations and Cooperation could play a very important role in resolving this conflict by establishing, funding, or hosting a program in South Africa that brings Israeli and Palestinian governmental and non-governmental leaders together to discuss how to build a region with two sovereign states. As South African citizens, we call on our government to encourage the parties to work together towards building a sustainable peace in which a two-state solution is completed, with a viable Palestinian state existing side by side with the Jewish state as its neighbor. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much to the Jewish Board of Deputies. It's a pity your video didn't work, but next time. The next organization I'll call on is called Bridges for Peace. I hope you are represented here today. Dignitaries, ladies and gentlemen, I'm Chris Eden, National Director of Bridges for Peace. Thank you to the committee for reframing the title of the symposium. I believe it provides a more useful framework within which to work. We represent a position on Israel that is common among Christians and Jews that would describe themselves as Bible believing. In other words, our faith is based on the expectation of the literal fulfillment and undertakings recorded in the Bible. A large portion of Christians in South Africa and indeed Africa would count themselves as part of this community. This practical expectation relates to our day-to-day existence and not just as far as the destiny of Israel and the Jewish people is concerned. Please do not construe our position as one that devalues any other of the players on this dramatic stage. My approach today will be to define Israel as the other and to illustrate why this otherness, especially when coupled with apparent success, creates a tension that relates more to Israel's existence than to its behavior. Israel is in an immediate region. You need to use your up and down button. Israel is in an immediate region that is inhomogeneous in two respects. Firstly, the prevailing culture in the region is Arab, and non-Arab Israel, stretching from the Mediterranean Sea to the Red Sea, divides this region into western and eastern sections. Continue. And the next one. So we see on this illustration, Israel within an Arab world is the sliver which divides the region into two pieces. The map illustrates this situation. Israel is therefore culturally different to its immediate environment. If we look at it from a different perspective, and secondly, this would be with considerable overlaps. Israel is located in a region that is overwhelmingly Islamic. Organization of Arab Islamic Unity with 57 member states. Once again, Israel divides this world into eastern and western sectors. There is a further tension in the case of Israel. Prevailing Islamic interpretation determines that land once ruled by Islam becomes part of a collective that has changed its status. Israel was once part of this collective and pressures exist to return it to this collective. If we look at the statement made by the leader of, next slide, the map, this is illustrated by this comment made by the chief of Hamas, Khaled Mashal, and is frequently embedded in the public statements of President Ahmadinejad of Iran. The maps illustrate a bizarre point. While Israel is accused of being too big, It is precisely because it is so small relative to these two collectives that it causes tension, and in fact, halving Israel's size will add to this phenomenon. It's like a chip in your windscreen right before your line in vision. Halving its size won't reduce the irritation. Israel constitutes a challenge in its world in several respects. Although there are several such challenges, I've chosen two to illustrate this point and will then conclude. Governments are appointed to represent the needs of the people. Until the start of the Arab Spring, Israel bucked the prevailing trend in the region of entrenched national leaders. Israel has had 18 elections in its 65-year existence, and every government that has been unsuccessful in addressing the needs of the Israeli populace has been replaced through the ballot box. This has reflected poorly on other regional leaders that have seized power and refused to relinquish it in respect of their performance. This survey, based issued by Freedom House, illustrates political rights and civil liberties neither score well in the region. Economically, based on gross domestic product per capita, Israel shames its immediate neighbors and almost all the major role players in the region. In a region where basic food prices have more than doubled in the past 18 months, is it any wonder that the populations in these countries have risen in revolt against their governments? I could continue for the next hour with illustrations like this concerning opportunities for women, absorption of refugees, minority rights, and more. Jews and Christians are interested and indeed proud of Israel. It is a successful nation that delivers innovation in every field of human endeavor, punching way beyond its weight. Psalm 147's assertion that the Lord will rebuild Jerusalem and restore the dispersed of Israel, and many other Bible passages are happening before our eyes. We consider this to be good news. In conclusion, if Israel was the 23rd member of the League of Arab States and was the 58th member of the Organization of the Islamic Conference, if the minorities in question were Christians, Kurds, or even Baha'is, and every accusation leveled against Israel today was evident in this make-believe state, then with confidence I would venture to say that we would not be meeting here today. There would be no debate on this matter. Thank you very much.
I found the reference to Israel as other interesting because it reminded me a bit of postmodern philosophy. There's a lot of thinking on the state of the other. Maybe such serious issues, sometimes we can introduce a bit of a lighter tone as well. The next organization I'll call on is the International Christian Embassy of Jerusalem. Welcome, and please share your thoughts with us.
Thank you, Mr. Facilitator, Mr. Chairman, honored dignitaries of the embassies, leaders of the opposition, I see Mr. Kenneth Meshew here, and honored guests. Mr. Chairman Magama, this is now my second bite at the cherry, and I would just like to continue where I stopped last time. I just would like to mention, just for the benefit of everybody, just a few points, salient points that I raised at the previous meeting. The one was about the present Palestinian bid for full membership of the United Nations without being declared a fully recognized independent Palestinian state at this stage does not comply with the core principles and constitution of the United Nations as a legal body, as it represents independent nations in accordance with the policy framework and agreed principles as embedded in their own founding document. However, the International Christian Embassy Jerusalem SA branch supports the United Security Council resolutions 242 and 338 as a framework to achieve mutual and meaningful negotiations between Israel and the Palestinians. So what I'm trying to say here, Mr. Chairman, we are totally for full negotiations. And most importantly, that without the acknowledgement and acceptance of the juristic person or legal entity of each of the two sides towards each other, there can be no agreement and no mutual contract. That is a prime requirement, in this instance. Now, I mentioned last time when I closed to say that the all-encompassing South African CODESA negotiations of 1993 led to the birth of the new Democratic Republic of South Africa. It was built on a comprehensive national constitution as the foundation stone of our own nation and is embraced by all South Africans with pride. It is truly a roadmap to be followed to solve all disputes on statehood conflicts in the world. And we should promote this. We have something to offer, Mr. Chairman. And Mr. Chairman, the South African model has a paramount requirement, and that is that all negotiations have to be transparent and involve all stakeholders, affected parties and interest groups. My fellow South Africans will recall in those days that there was not one body, one person, one institution, one interest group in South Africa or in its borders that did not partake in this whole process at CODESA and in the formulations of a new constitution for South Africa. Actually, we can say with pride, all South Africans, each individual was involved in this process. I was at CODESA and I saw it. Nothing would proceed if everybody was not fully recognized and a full record kept of such inputs from such people. Now, the outcome of such a structured and bilateral agreed negotiations was captured in an interim constitution for the new state. You will recall that the negotiations couldn't get to a final conclusion because they weren't legally elected into the government. And as such, the interim constitution of 1993 was written by people and constituted bodies, as I said, who were not democratically elected into government. However, they could set up a constitutional assembly to write the proposed constitution. So as such, they could write this constitution, and then after the national elections, we had a duly elected government, and they published the proposed constitution for comment, but with very wide and inclusive consultation processes. After the approval of this constitution, many groups, leaders, went into the communities, to each group, household, and area, taking this constitution to the people. You remember, I've got an example here. A little book of the constitution, millions of those were published and handed to each and every individual and grouping to read through to see if the Bill of Rights, which was embedded in the constitution, met their needs as required and demanded by them. And the Bill of Rights today, Mr. Chairman, as you know, is the protection of the rights of each individual in South Africa, each political group, each grouping and interest groups, whatever they are. As long as we are South Africans, it protects you, and the government has a duty to uphold the Bill of Rights on behalf of its people. Mr. Chairman, that is the only way that the International Christian Embassy of Jerusalem, the South African branch, puts to the meeting again today. We say to Israel, which we love very dearly, we say to the Palestinians, which we love very dearly, I know that area, I've worked there, I've seen it, I've been there for 3 years. We must get a solution, and the only solution is what South Africa must offer them. You've been through it, Chairman. We've all been through it. We know it. We know the struggles that we had in getting all this right. Think of the national flag of South Africa, which was changed, what was a very emotional matter at the time. We are how proud and how we embrace our flag of today, all of us. We feel one, and that is my call today. Let Israel and the Palestinians follow this model. Stop all the shortcuts and unilateral approaches. It will fail. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. We can definitely do with some passionate South African insights on peace and negotiation. The next organization, is the South African Zionist Federation. Welcome, and please share your thoughts with us.
Thank you and good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, the Parliamentary Committee, for giving us this opportunity, which we haven't had before. Honourable ambassadors, dignitaries and attendees. Zionism is a national liberation movement, like any other liberation movement all over the world, very similar to what the ANC was, that aspires for a home for the Jews in Israel. And that is a right enjoyed by all people in the world. What we recognize the right of both Israelis and Palestinians to live in their own independent states. We call for a two-state solution, where these two states live side by side in mutual recognition of each other. We respect the Palestinian right to choose their own government and live according to their own laws and to their own religion. Israel merely desires the same. Moreover, Israel's Declaration of Independence in 1948 protects the rights of minorities and of all religions. These rights are also protected by the government and by the Supreme Court. Whilst we support the notion of a Palestinian independence, we do not support the way in which they are going about it at the United Nations at the moment, because they are not resolving or discussing or negotiating any of the core issues. They are not, the core issues being the borders, the refugees on both sides. And remember, there were over 850,000 Jews that were expelled by Muslim states as a result of Israel's independence. Mutual recognition has not yet happened. Well, except Israel, of course, does recognize the Palestinians. And the rights of Jews to live in Palestine. Abbas, Abu Mazen, has said that not one Jew will be allowed to live in Palestine, and that is an issue that needs to be resolved. The conflict will not be resolved and may in fact intensify if the Palestinians pursue with this endeavor. And as a South African, I call on this committee to reconsider its support of the unilateral declaration of independence by the Palestinians and to recommend that the government do likewise. Israel is a democratic and multicultural society, and non-Jews make a vital contribution to Israeli society, as can be seen from some of these slides. All public over 20% of the population are comprised of Muslims, and about 5% of the population by Christians. Christianity is the only growing religion in the Middle East. Only in Israel are the numbers of Christians growing. In all other regions, Christians suffer discrimination, but in Israel they have enjoyed free rights to practice their religion. Can you move on to some of the pictures? All facilities. Okay, Israel has Jews. It's not when we talk about a Jewish state, it's not one state made up of one type of white Jewish people. There are many Jews from many different parts of the world. Okay, I just want to focus on the non-Jewish element. The head of, the captain of Hapoel Tel Aviv is an Arab, and there are many top, one of the top teams in the Israeli Football League is Sakhnin, B'nai Sakhnin, which is an Arab village. This gentleman here is a judge, he's an Arab, and he committed our previous president of the State of Israel to 14 years in prison. And I ask you if that could ever happen in South Africa or in the previous regime under apartheid. This gentleman here is a historian, a poet, and he is a Druze, and he was an ambassador in Ecuador. There is a gentleman that visited South Africa recently, Ishmael Khaldi, who is a Bedouin, and I believe that he has just been appointed to one of our most important, or Israel's most important ambassadorial positions, and that is in London. Jamal Zakalia is an Arab. He has led his parliament, the Balad parliament, to three terms in the Israel Knesset. Okay. The one other controversial issue is the security fence. The security fence I call the fence of life, because that fence has saved both Israeli and Palestinian lives. and the fence was built as a direct response to terrorist attacks. And mass terrorism was destroying the lives of the Israeli economy and the lives of Palestinians and Israelis. Over 10,000 people today live in a maimed state and need medical attention. We could show you very graphic pictures of that, but that is not the intention here. The intention is to move on. And so that fence does not establish a border between Israel and Palestine. It does not show an indication to annex any Palestinian lands. And any Palestinian lands that were used for the fence were bought and negotiated with the Palestinian owners. 451 miles of you can laugh, but that's true. 451 miles of that security fence do not comprise concrete barriers, but are merely a wire fence. The number of deaths in the time decreased by 95%, and that is why that fence, which was built here, shows the importance of the fence in saving lives for the benefit of all of Israel's citizens. We just want to end with a clip, because what we want to show is that terrorism has disrupted the lives of Israelis, and we are and Israelis, when I say Israelis, I'm calling on I refer to Palestinians and Israelis, and we are prepared to make great sacrifices. This was a prisoner exchange recently for one Israeli soldier, Gilad Shalit. Israel suffered terrorism. Each of these people had blood on their hands. And we are only going to look at six of these terrorists that were released. And this just shows you the extent to which Israel will go in order to make peace. Thank you.
Palestinians are celebrating. They are getting 1,027 of their heroes in a prison swap. Who are these brave freedom fighters? And why were they in prison for the first place? Here are six of them. Waleed Anjaz was sentenced to 36 life imprisonments for taking the lives of 36 people in 2002 in three separate terrorist attacks at the Moment Bar in Jerusalem, at a student's restaurant in the Hebrew University, and a nightclub in Rishon LeZion City. All of his victims were innocent civilians, many of them teenagers. Hossan Badran was sentenced to 17 years in prison for his responsibility for the massacres that took place between 2001 and 2002 at the Tel Aviv Dolphinarium nightclub, the Sabaro Pizzeria in Jerusalem, at the Matza restaurant in Haifa, and at the Park Hotel in Netanya during the Passover celebration, killing entire families. Abdel Hadi Ghanem was sentenced to 16 life imprisonments after killing 16 bus passengers by hijacking the bus and driving it off a cliff on July 1989. Akram Tamimi was sentenced for 16 life imprisonments for her responsibility to the murder of 16 people, among them children and babies, at the Sabaro Pizzeria in Jerusalem in August 2001. In 2006, she claimed she would have murdered again if had the chance. Amna Muna was sentenced for life imprisonment after using an internet chat to tempt 16-year-old Ofer Rahum to come from Ashkelon to Ramallah, where he was ambushed and shot to death, January 2001. Aziz Zalha was sentenced to 40 years in prison for brutally murdering two Israeli reserve soldiers, who on 2000 got lost on their way and accidentally arrived in Ramallah. Zaha became famous worldwide when he waved his bloody hands through the window of the building where the murder took place. In this verdict, the judges stated that this incident revealed human nature in its lowest form. Neither a glimpse of compassion, a bit of humanness, nor a trace of mercy could be found that day in Ramallah. Welcomed with ceremonies, flowers, celebrations, streets will be named after them. These are the Palestinian heroes.
Thank you to the South African Zionist Federation. The next organization I'll call on to share their thoughts with us will be the Egyptian Community of South Africa. Just a request from the committee to all the presenters. If you haven't already given a copy of your presentation to the committee, please do so before you leave, because that will help them in their deliberations later. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, honorable members, ladies and gentlemen. The peace lovers, I greet you with the peace greeting. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Peace be upon you. In these 5 minutes, I would like to address or brief you on two questions, which I think is very important for the statehood proposal by the Palestinian Authority to the United Nations. Does the Palestinians have the right to self-determination? And the second question is, why now the statehood? The answer for the first question is yes. The establishment of Palestinian state is a debt owed by the international community to the Palestinian people. That is long overdue. The Palestinians do meet or have most of, if not all, the conditions and rules of the United Nations for a membership. The international community does in general support an independent state for Palestine. 128 countries recognize Palestine as state. This cover about 75% of global population. If you look at the population apart from the government, the population of the world do recognize and support the proposal of Palestine. A poll conducted by the BBC and Global Scan has served opinion of 20,500 people in 19 countries across the globe. It found that 49% support the proposal of the Palestinian statehood, while only 21% oppose it. Surprisingly, the poll result showed greater support for the bid, even in countries when government's opposition was strong, such as the United States of America, where 45% of Americans backed the proposal against 56% opposing. In the largest three European Union members, the poll showed that greater public support, with France showing 54% support and 20% opposition. Germany, 53% against 28%, and in the United Kingdom, there were 53% supporting the proposal and 26% opposing the proposal. I think this is an overwhelming support from both government and public for the right of the Palestinians for self-determination. Turning to why now a statehood, I will not go before 1993 and the attempts by the PLO and the deceased leader, our leader Yasser Arafat, when he addressed the United Nations in 1974 and thereafter. But this starts from the Oslo Accord, which signed in 1993. And here I would like to focus just only in one aspect, the settlements. And it was agreed at that time that a 5 year negotiation should result in signing a final agreement between Palestinian and Israelis and the establishment of a Palestinian state as the land occupied in 1967. Since that, almost all the Israeli governments used every opportunity for making peace to finish and destroy the possibility of reaching an agreement with the Palestinians. It continued building of its illegal settlements in the West Bank and Jerusalem. I think the map in front of you does illustrate of how the West Bank became like a Swiss cheese, with the building of illegal settlements and a barbed wall which has eaten so many of the West Bank land and destroyed so many of the economic and livelihood of the Palestinians, separated the villages of Palestinians and the families of Palestinians from each other. Mr. Chairman, honorable members, ladies and gentlemen, the just of Palestine cause is clear as the sun. Whatever the Israelis and their friends try to propagate that they will fail, history always approves that just win and lie and oppression fall. I will end by what Dortmund Tutu says: if you are neutral in situation of injustice, you have chosen the side of the oppressor. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I would just like to give the honorable chair of the committee a moment. He just needs to respect some protocol.
No, thank you. Thank you very much. Please allow me to acknowledge our own Ambassador Max, the Chief Director for Middle East from our own Department of International Relations Corporation. Ambassador, it was an oversight on my part. You tend to forget when excellencies are here representing their countries. Let me also recognize Mr. Ashraf Ali Kadokamim from the Charge d'Affaires from the League of Arab States, South Africa Mission. Let's talk about it. Just make those acknowledgements. And any other member of the diplomatic corps that has joined this gathering.
I hope I will pronounce the name of the next organization correctly. I'm studying Arabic, but it's a slow process. It's the organization called Open Shuhada Street. Could you please come and share your thoughts and views with us?
Good morning, Mr. Chair, comrades and friends. As you can see, I am in the middle. I've happened to break the apartheid wall. So I'm sitting in the middle. My name is Zaki Ahmed, and I'm a member of Open Shuhada Street and of the Legal Defense and Solidarity Fund. We raise money for Palestinian prisoners and detainees. Yesterday, bus 198 tried to leave a settlement because seven Palestinians boarded it in order to show that they have a right to board an Israeli bus. Their names, four of the names are Badr Dweck, Huwaida Araf, Basij Al-Araf, and Huya Ziada. And these young people were brutally and violently arrested by the Israeli military and border police. Now, I have heard much this morning, an incredible amount, about South Africa's constitutional negotiations. And I want to address that period. That is my job here today. What many people forget is that we had a revolution that was almost successful. That's what people forget. And that led to negotiations. But what many people forget, especially those who are privileged and remain privileged in our country, what they forget is that we had set preconditions for negotiation. very strong preconditions, which were, I believe, fulfilled. Comrade Chair and members of the committee, you will remember the Harare Declaration, taken in August 1989. And let me just point to you a few of the demands of that declaration. Apart from the political demands, which were the 9 political demands based on the Freedom Charter, which were the preconditions accepted for negotiations at CODESA, there was a section that said climate of negotiations, which was also accepted by De Klerk and the National Party, even though they continued killing our people using collaborators like Gacha Buthelezi and so on. The climate of negotiations, I'm just reading a little bit here, together with the rest of the world, we believe that it is essential before any negotiations take place that the necessary climate for negotiations be created. The apartheid regime has the urgent responsibility to respond positively to this universally acclaimed demand and thus create the climate. 19.2. Accordingly, the present regime should at the very least release all political prisoners and detainees unconditionally and refrain from imposing any restrictions on them. I was also once called a terrorist, I'll remind people. 19.2. Lift all bans and restrictions on all prescribed and restricted organizations and people. Now let me state clearly, I don't support what Hamas did here or anyone did here. I think that is wrong. Just as much as I believe that this terror against the people in Gaza is wrong. And here we unbanned the PAC and everyone who also involved in terrible bombings. End the state of emergency and repeal all legislation such as and including the Internal Security Act designed to circumscribe political activity. 10 people in Palestine cannot meet in a private home for a meeting in occupied Palestinian territory. Cease all political executions. Israel does not kill people. That's in death sentences, they bomb people. These measures are necessary to produce the conditions in which free discussion can take place, an essential condition to ensure that the people themselves participate in the process of remaking their country. The measures listed above should therefore precede negotiations. And that is what De Klerk did, because he released all our political prisoners, unbanned the ANC, allowed all our refugees and exiles to return. So let's speak. Grassroots popular movements in the occupied Palestinian territories who work on the basis of unarmed struggle argue correctly that the negotiation of the oppressed people must be based on the social power of the people. It cannot be surrender. It cannot be surrender. The party in power in Israel says from the Mediterranean to the Jordan in their charter, Likud. They say no land to Palestinians. And I would suggest that the Hamas must change its charter and Likud must change its charter. So the young people and old people in the popular organizations in Palestine say the following demands are their minimum demands. End the occupation. Remove all armed forces behind the Green Line. That's the 1967 border. All political prisoners and detainees must be released without restrictions and conditions. Amal Tamimi, shown here, has been banished to Jordan. And what she did, she drove a car that led to a suicide bombing. And I believe that suicide bombing is wrong. But I believe also that if there's genuine reconciliation, if you mean it genuinely, return her to her home and family. Every settlement must be removed. Since the Palestinians negotiated, settlements have been created everywhere. Just two quick ones. The right and return of Palestinian refugees and exiles. And I believe that the Jewish refugees expelled from Arab states have a right to return there and should be allowed to return there. Agree the rights and freedoms of every Israeli, including Palestinian Israelis who are denied equality, dignity, and humanity. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I think it's, in as much as we learn about the Palestinian and the Israeli conflict, I think it's also good for us to remind ourselves of the very complicated processes of negotiation, political negotiation. In our studies from SIA on mediation efforts on the continent, I think there's a lot of lessons we can take. And there's also been a lot of good experiences. But let's move to the next organization, which is the Palestinian Solidarity Committee of South Africa. You are more than welcome, and please share your thoughts with us.
Good morning, honorable MPs, members of the Portfolio Committee, honorable ambassadors, colleagues, ladies and gentlemen. My friend has, I believe, got held up in some traffic here, so I decided to do this, but yeah. We've heard a lot this morning, ladies and gentlemen, members of Parliament. We heard a lot from many quarters, and I just want to touch on a few very important and pertinent aspects, especially the first aspect where we had the speaker from the Jewish Board of Deputies, I think, that came up and spoke so eloquently about how we as South Africans should embrace each other, should be the leaders in finding a solution to the problem. We had a speaker from the Zionist Federation who came and told us, gave us facts about issues on the ground. And we had a peace organization who came and never spoke peace here. The solution we want to find here should be a South African solution. Now, honorable members of Parliament, we know where we've come from. We've experienced where we've come from. And I come here, I think safely I can say, I come here speaking with a constituency of millions of people in South Africa. Our beloved home, the African National Congress, the Tripartite Alliance, which include the South African Communist Party, which include the COSATU, comes here with the very same call on our government, is that we should lend support to any initiative that would end the suffering of the Palestinian people. We talk about negotiations, which we must initiate very quickly and go to that. We've been negotiating, or Palestinians have been trying to negotiate for many, many years. The South African solution took 1993 for negotiations, and a few years down the line, an outcome. So there was sincerity in what we've done, and is there sincerity to get to grips on the Palestinian issue? I want to send our parliamentarians to a report commissioned by the Human Sciences Research Council in March 6, 2010. I think it lends enough background for us to make an informed decision on where South Africa should be and how we should vote on the conflict. Another very worrying factor, Mr. MPs and honorable members and friends here, is that we should realize that the problem in Palestine, the outstanding problem in Palestine, has come out to lose big time. We have seen over the past years mass demonstrations in favor of Palestine growing by the year. Started off with 20 people, it went to 100 people, now we're getting thousands. And by next year, we should have millions taking to the street to make sure that there is a favorable outcome to the question of Palestine. We should also recall that while talking peace from so many quarters here this afternoon, especially from my colleagues who buy onto the Israeli side, we should also recall a march that happened 2 years ago in Johannesburg when we were met with brutal force outside the offices of the Zionist Federation of South Africa, where we were threatened in our own country, we were threatened by people outside of this country, and we cannot allow us as South Africans to be treated in that way. So if we want peace, we should show respect. And there should be no negotiation without justice. If there's no justice, there cannot be negotiations. We talk about negotiations, without justice, no negotiations. We've seen it. South Africa has made the initiative to go to the ICC and oppose the wall, the apartheid wall, as we call it, has been built there. But still, I want to say, I send you to the report of the Human Science Research Council of March 6, 2010, for this commission to look into and make your findings from there. I thank you all. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And then, last but definitely not least, we'll have Olan Kosatu to share your thoughts with us on this very complicated question.
Members, thank you for having me. We met not too long ago, I think it was about a month back, on the same question. Parliament's Portfolio Committee and a few organizations, and it was said there that the situation in Palestine is dire. Honorable members had seen video footage, they had heard personal accounts and testaments as to what is going on in Palestine. So I won't talk too much about the personal accounts of people who've experienced torture, Palestinians who've experienced grave forms of victimization. But instead I'll say, if you want to talk peace, let's talk peace. We must pledge our support for the following basic principles articulated by Palestinian political and civil society organizations and several long-standing UN resolutions. We must end the Israeli occupation and colonization of all Palestinian lands, and we must dismantle the Israeli apartheid wall. How can we go forward with an apartheid wall in Palestine? We cannot go forward. No negotiations can go forward with violence. We must recognize the fundamental rights of the Palestinian citizens of Israel to full equality. We must respect, protect, and promote the rights of Palestinian refugees to return to their homes and properties. There must be an immediate end to Israel's illegal settlements and blockade on Gaza. And there must be an end to Israel's discriminatory and racist policies. You cannot negotiate without these. These are non-negotiables. Regardless of where you come from, which country you emanate from, the Palestinian conflict cannot be approached without looking at these non-negotiables. Since the last time we met, honorable members, the Russell Tribunal sat, a very important tribunal, which I'm sure all of you, my comrades included, would have seen the recommendations of the Russell Tribunal. Jurists from all over the world deliberated on the exact same issue we're going to deliberate on now. Our duty, honorable MPs, your duty as well, as elected members representing South Africans, is to break the crime of silence. The Palestinian issue, very important. I am expecting honorable members of parliament to take this issue to the Pan-African Parliament, where we debate it and we come up with a united approach towards the Palestinian question. And it must also go to the National Assembly. I am counting on honorable members, MPs, to do this on my behalf as a South African. We must have a united approach and a single voice as Africans. Honorable members sitting here today, many of them have liberated you and I. Honorable Member Corny September, Honorable Member Sisa Njikana, which I can't see here today, he was part of the last meeting, Honorable Chairperson, these people have liberated us as South Africans. And I, on behalf of my organization, are expecting these honorable members to liberate Palestinians as well. Thank you.
Now it's my job to say thank you to the presenters for sticking to our quite tight program. Honorable Chair, should we proceed to a tea break as we take into the program? So we have a tea break of 15 minutes, and there's a...
Permission of the chair, I wish to strongly object to the statement which was made by one of the speakers who came from the, I think it's called Open Shuruda Street, where he openly said Kaja Butelezi killed his own people. I'm not even sure who his own people are. That now goes beyond even the freedom of speech. It borders in the realm of defamation. I don't think South Africans will be in a position to assist the Israelis and the Palestinians resolve their problems if we come around and spew propaganda ourselves against ourselves. I strongly want to object to that statement, Mr. Chairman, and it should be recorded.
No, thank you very much, Honorable Kosar. I agree with you. I don't think it's correct that we, bring in. In fact, if the Honorable Butelezi was here, I'm sure he would have, had the opportunity to respond. May I request the gathering to be tempered and please be sensitive to these realities. Thank you very much. Thank
you. Okay, coffee break. Thank you very much.
I'm going to